Well, as we carry on with our series on the training of the 12, and this has been, it's been a little bit difficult, this series. I've mentioned that before. I say that every time, don't I? But as you go through the Gospels and you try to pick out the ways that Jesus was trying to invest in and train the 12 for what they were going to need later. And those are the things we're trying to get a hold of. Those main things that Jesus was teaching them, because it was going to fall on their shoulders. They were going to be the ones. The church was going to be reliant, obviously, upon Jesus himself, upon the Holy Spirit. But it was going to be up to them. They were going to be the ones that were going to lead. And so, these things that he was teaching them, these things are critical for us to know. And most of the things he was teaching them, it was in a seed form. In other words, we get more details of it later. But the heart of it, we get here. And there's something about getting it here in this raw form that is particularly powerful and impacting to us. And so last week we looked at this idea of Jesus teaching his disciples humility. And the way that he taught them, the first way he taught them was he showed them. He showed them what humility was and what it meant to live in complete dependence on the Father and to overflow the character and the nature of the Father. And that's the foundation of what they were to do. And you remember it was not a lesson that was easy for them to learn. It's not a lesson that's easy for any of us to learn. And they were sitting down in this group and they were discussing among themselves who was going to be, the prominent one in the kingdom. Definitely a long ways from humility. And so Jesus, instead of beginning a complex teaching on humility, he just turned around and there was a child there. He calls the child over and he says, "You must be like this child. This is what you must be like if you would be the most in the kingdom." And we looked at the things he was pointing out. He was pointing out the humility of a child, the faith of a child. And these things, this thing in particular has impacted me this week. And, some of the men gathered to pray this morning, I shared this with them, but, it's like as I see God on exactly what we're to cover for Sunday morning and how we're supposed to do this, my general attitude is, okay, God, I have nothing. What are we going to do? And it's like a child turning to his parents and saying, "I want the cookies that are on the top shelf." And he can't get up there. He has no ability to get up there and get them. And simplicity is expecting his parent to pick him up to what he can't get. It's full dependence. It's intimacy. It's reliance. It's having a prayer answered. It's saying, "Help me, I can't do it." And so, the parent reaches down, picks up, or in this case, God reaches down, picks us up, and he does for us what we cannot do on our own. And there's something about that faith, you got that in there, right? The faith of believing that God is there, believing that he will respond to your prayer, believing he'll meet your need exactly as you need it met, and believing that he will give you the strength, he'll do what needs to be done. And there's something about that, believing that he's there, believing that he loves us, believing that he desires to have fellowship with us. That whole thing of that full dependence upon God and not ourselves, faith, humility, surrender, the cross, that those things bring us into intimate fellowship with him. And that's where I've been this week, is that desiring. Anytime I've struggled, I haven't had that closeness of his presence, it's by faith, turning to him and believing that he will be there. And that's been my desire this week. That's been my response to our study on humility, of desiring and having that awareness of the presence of God and that intimacy and communion with him. Now, of course, that relationship with God must overflow into our relationship with the brethren, with our brothers and sisters. in this whole thing of putting others' needs ahead of our own, and not thinking of ourselves first, not pursuing our own thing, but pursuing the cause of Christ in our own life and in other people's life too. So that brings us to this, to finish up this last address of Jesus to his disciples in Galilee. So we've talked about this. This chapter 18 is this is the last address of Jesus, this last investment installment before the next, the chapter 19. You'll notice it opens up. It opens up in Judea. They're moving on. They're headed south, and this last one is critical to their development and to what he desires to do with them. So they've spent much time at this point for where they are. They spent much time on learning the identity of Jesus. That's taken a while, hasn't it? To learn really who Jesus is. He really is. He really is God incarnate. He really is God the Son. He's deity. And that's taken them a while. And for them to learn the mission of Jesus, and to learn that they are to take on this mission as their own, as their core purpose, the driving force in everything that they do. So these are the things they've been learning. The identity of Jesus, the mission of Jesus, and their own calling. Their own calling to come and follow me and to do as I have been doing. So now, what they're going to get now, now they're going to get a little bit more on the nature of this covenant community, this kingdom community. You see that? In chapter 18, that's really what they're asking. How can we be the most? And Jesus is saying, you don't really understand the nature of this community we're talking about. You don't understand the nature of the kingdom. And that's when he goes into humility and describes to them this character trait that is primary to being a part of this. So the rest of this chapter, chapter 18, we're going to learn, and he's going to teach them community principles of how does this thing operate, the church, and how do the smaller communities that you're a part of, how does this operate? And so we've seen the disciples misunderstand much of what Jesus says in his earthly ministry here. But these things are going to become, so they're going to misunderstand what he's saying here in Matthew chapter 18. They're not going to get it all. But what we're going to see is this is going to become clear later. After the resurrection, you remember Jesus spends 40 days with them teaching, and then after the coming of the Holy Spirit and the beginning of the church. And so the things he talks about in chapter 18, we're really going to see these things come to fruition in Acts chapter 2. We're going to see these things happen, and they're going to put these things into practice, even though they don't really understand them yet. So what's going to happen is, as they take ownership of this, they feel the responsibility of it, they're going to understand it more. There's an understanding of those who feel the love and the responsibility, for instance, in the body. For those people that feel the weight of responsibility, that I am a part, I must do my part. People that feel that responsibility, and they feel it out of a love for God and a love for the brethren, they begin to understand more deeply how the church works and how it operates. Now, you find the same thing is true in a business or at work, don't you? You know the people on your job, on the job, that really take on the responsibility. Like, this is important. My job here is important. I feel the responsibility. The people that take that on, they understand the big vision and the picture of the company as a whole, don't they? They feel the responsibility. They feel the weight. And then they really understand. And the same thing holds true with these disciples. When they really begin to feel the responsibility and the weight of go and make disciples, they begin to understand how to do it and what it's about and how it works. So, you know why I'm telling you that, right? You will never understand this, what we talk about today, until you take the responsibility to do it. Until you take the responsibility to do it. Until you obey. And then you understand how this kingdom works, how the communities of Christ work. These disciples were trained in the big picture to develop community. And, you know, you hear that word thrown around a lot these days, but it really is just a group of people that have a common purpose, that have unity. And so, certainly that is a good way to describe the church. We are a group of people, we have a common purpose, And that's the way to describe smaller groups to make up the bigger group, which we'll discuss in a minute. They're being trained by living it. You said they're living within community, those 12 guys. You have the three that are kind of a little group. Then you have the 12. Then you have the bigger group of the 70 that were sent out, remember? But they were living in community. This idea of working together for a common purpose and a cause. So that's how they were being trained. They were living in this circumstance. And they were able to, because of this, they were able to understand with their head and with their heart what the job was that was given them. They were really able to understand their heart, cause, and purpose that Jesus was giving them. And so this following section that we're going to look at is just one of the many that Jesus is using to prepare his disciples to do just that, to work in community together, a common cause, a common purpose, and to take the message to the ends of the earth through individuals, but through communities of individuals. So, to get there requires something. To even have a common purpose and a common goal. The first place is the cross. Until there is a coming to the cross, and Jesus said, basically, unless you come like a little child. So, if you have not come in faith to God, and put your faith in Him, not yourself, then you're not a part of that community. You come believing, and then you're not really able to do your part in the community until you've taken up your cross daily. So, you see, this is what he talked about first. He talked about the cross. He talked about humility. It's all within context of him describing what kingdom communities are like, how they operate, and how it works. So he's going to go from humility, he's going to talk about holy living, and he's going to talk about forgiveness. These principles of being a part of this community we call the church. So what you're going to see is that in the midst of this, talking about community, he's going to use a specific parable, a story, where there's one lost sheep. And that one lost sheep gets his attention. That one lost sheep is important. So right in the midst of talking about community, of using terms that have to do with family and the flock and the church, we're going to see that the individual matters. So don't, as we talk about community, don't think communism. That's not the idea. So this is the kingdom community. And so we'll try to gain a deeper understanding of how that works. So, a unity of community which reflects the unity and the fellowship of God. So God is the triune God. God the Father, God the Son, God the Holy Spirit. And there's a unity and a communion there among the Godhead. And the church is supposed to reflect that. The fellowship and the unity of the church is supposed to reflect that, a loving, united society. And we use terms like brother, like child, sister, family, to help us understand and to describe this thing of the community of God. So, to love God, if we say that we love God, to love God is to love one another. And to love one another and to love God is to love the lost. It's to love the brethren and the lost. And it's to have unity in this endeavor of loving God, loving the brethren, and loving the lost. But this whole thing, you see, there's been this process to get here. The cross, humility, and now he's going to try to give us the big picture. But before we get there, let's try to understand a little more deeply what this, a little bit about this idea of community. And, you know, in sharing with a non-believer, the best proof of God for them is the unity and warmth of the community, of the body. Let's go to John 17. John 17, 20 through 26. So this is a little bit of a long section here, but this is, I think it takes the whole passage to understand, and to understand how we are messengers of reconciliation, but that there's a way to go about this. And we're going to look at some examples a little later, of how it works when we bring somebody into the community, the fellowship of believers, then they should see something. Something should happen. This is Jesus praying. My prayer is not for them alone. I pray also for those who will believe in me through their message, that all of them may be one, Father, just as you are in me and I am in you. May they also be in us, so that the world may believe that you have sent me. I have given them the glory that you gave me, that they may be one as we are one, I in them and you in me. May they be brought to complete unity, to let the world know that you sent me. So how's the world going to know? Through the unity of the community. To let the world know that you sent me and have loved them even as you have loved me. Father, I want those you have given me to be with me where I am and to see my glory, the glory you have given me because you loved me before the creation of the world. And then down to verse 26, I have made you known to them and will continue to make you known in order that the love you have for me may be in them and that I myself may be in them. Now that is a weighty and that's a huge passage. We're not going to delve into that, but that gives you the flavor of what Jesus is expecting from these communities of believers that he's talking about. That's what he's expecting the apostles to develop. That's what he wants them to do. That's what he wants to see happen from their ministry. If the future apostles were going to make disciples and influence others to make disciples, there must be a unity of purpose. And there must be something real and different about them. You see, we could follow all the rules. We could do everything the church is supposed to do. We could do it just right. But if it's not real, it will not do what it's supposed to do. If we individually have not really gone to the cross, if we really are not developing the grace of humility, and if we really are not loving God and loving one another and loving the lost, then we can do it all right. But it's the impact, there is going to be no power to it. It's not going to happen. So this is not a thing of just following the rules and doing things right. It has to be real. In other words, I honestly have to love you. It can't be that I just act right towards you. I honestly have to love you. If I'm going to impact you for Christ, I cannot just act humble. I must be humble. That must be a character trait of mine. So we cannot fake this. It has to be real. So Jesus starts with the cross. That's where he doesn't start with telling us how to have community. He starts with the cross for you and for me individually. So he's going to describe to them there here about this community. And he's going to talk about them having to develop this being on the same page of having the same core purpose. If we're going to be partners and we're going to accomplish God's purpose, we need to be on the same page. We need to have the same purpose in mind. So we need to be on the same page. But as we've been talking this morning, we can do that with much diversity and uniqueness rather than some mold that we have to fit into. And there must be a merciful system to take care of division and to take care of sin. So those are the things that he's going to describe to them here. That sin is going to come into the body. Division is going to come. And we need to have in place a plan of how are we going to deal with that. Or the whole thing is going to be ruined and the purpose is going to be not accomplished if we allow division and sin to come in. And then there's no power. There's no unity, there's no power. If we're not on the same page, there's no power. All this is according to John 17 that we just read there. You can go back and read that for yourself. So we see in there from Jesus' teaching, we're trying to introduce chapter 18. We see from Jesus' teaching that self throws a monkey wrench in the works of partnership and unity. So there's a great responsibility. If I am just pretending to be about the purposes of God, if I have not died to self, if I really, if that's not really me, if I'm really about my own purposes, but I'm just going through the motions, then this will never work. There will be no power in it. Self throws a monkey wrench into the works of partnership and unity. We all experience it. What is ideal is if, and maybe you guys have experienced this, I've experienced this, where you have, there is a community that is going about God's work. And I show up to participate and to do, but I'm not right. I'm not right. Maybe I'm feeling a little grumpy. And somebody says, what's going on? You seem a little on edge today. And then I can say, I'm just grumpy today. I'm not right. Well, let's get right. Because this is important. We have something to take care of here. So, when one person is not right, they need to get right. And we need to help them, not by beating them over the head. We need to encourage them to be right. Now, that will not always be received. But there's a way to go about it. And that's some of the things we will talk about here. The apostles had this unenviable task, an seemingly impossible task, to make sure all of this existed in the early church. You see, all this we're talking about, they were responsible, and they didn't quite understand it yet, but they were responsible to make sure all these things showed up, that they had unity, they had taken up the cause and the purpose of Christ, that they were dying to self, that they were loving one another, they were forgiving one another, they were holding one another accountable, that they were not about their own business, they were about the business of Jesus. They were responsible to make sure that that happened in the early church. That was their job. They were to take on that responsibility. And we see that, and we'll read later Acts 2:42, where they were devoted to the fellowship. They were devoted to the Word. They were devoted to teaching. They were devoted to sharing their homes with one another. How they were, it worked. This was successful. It happened. It didn't seem at this moment it was going to be successful, because here they are arguing about who's going to be the greatest. But they are going to receive this teaching, and they are going to follow through on it. It is going to happen when we get to Acts with the early church. Now, some of the things he's talking about here in Matthew 18, that the church, the community, needs maintenance. It needs attention. Like a finely tuned sports car, like a vehicle. It needs a certain amount of attention. But the purpose of that car is not to serve itself. It's to serve the owner. And it's not going to work unless it's doing what it's designed to do. It needs to be out there on the road, not parked. If it's parked, you know what happens. You park a car, and it goes to pieces. It doesn't work. It ends up corroding and rusting, freezing up, locking up. You leave it parked, it doesn't work. So this thing has to be out there on the road doing what it was designed to do. The worst thing we could do is to park it. I guess, well, we could start scavenging parts off of it. You know, this part thinking that it has its right to go and do what it wants to do, apart from the core purpose of that car, is to be out there on the road doing its thing. Rather than, oh, the tire is going to roll over here and try to do its own thing. It makes no sense. It needs to be a part of, in conjunction with, doing its part that nobody else can do, and doing what it's designed to do. You're a part, and you are designed to do something, and it's not your own thing. It may be something you love, and I hope it is. But it's designed, you are designed to have a new, you have a member, you have a new mission. You have a new cause, not the same one you used to have, not to please yourself. And so, this is the way that things, and then he's telling them there must be a system to deal with these things when there are misfires in the engine and there's rust. There's this to be a system. How are we going to deal with this? And sometimes a part has to be removed. How are we going to deal with that? That's really tough. So these are things he's going to get into with them. But we do not gain this place of unity, of each part doing its part, by having a law or a bunch of rules or try to mold people. Rather, it's through loving one another. It's through people coming to the cross. It's by faith, obedience, It's not by forcing people or coercing people or guilting people into doing this. Let's look at this, Philippians 2, 1 through 5. If you have any encouragement from being united with Christ, if any comfort from His love, if any fellowship with the Spirit, if any tenderness and compassion, then make my joy complete by being like-minded, having the same love, being one in spirit and purpose. Do nothing out of selfish ambition. Do nothing out of selfish ambition or vain conceit, but in humility, consider others better than yourselves. Each of you should look not only to your own interest, but also to the interest of others. Your attitude should be the same as that of Christ Jesus. Okay, that is the recipe for a community that will work. It's just right there, just condensed. And then you know what it goes into next? It goes on and describes the humility of Jesus. So these are the things in seed form that Jesus is teaching His disciples in Matthew 18. He's teaching them, this is how you're going to get to this place here. And they don't get it yet. They don't understand yet. But this, well, let's turn there, Matthew 18. I guess we're ready. So 1 through 4, we've already taught that about coming in humility like a child. Now, as we go through this idea of a child, now, this is not just, it includes little children, but it's speaking about believers. Those, because if you are a believer, that means at least at some point in your life, you have come like a little child. You've come in faith, in humility, believing God. At least at some point, you've come recognizing where you stand with God or where you don't stand. And you've come putting your faith in Him and nothing else. So you've come like a child. And so, and many times the Bible will speak of, and John speaks of this, of little children, of calling the believers little children. So this is referring to little children in this whole section is referring to believers, basically. It counts, you can, it certainly works to use to talk about children in this, but really the core meaning here is that it's two believers. So let's look at verses 5 and 6 here. And whoever welcomes a little child like this in my name welcomes me. But if anyone causes one of these little ones to believe in me to sin, so he goes on, we're not going to read every single verse as we go through this chapter. In this community of believers, sin is a serious thing. In this community of little ones, of little children. And he's saying here, as one of the principles of community, is that do not influence another to sin, for you have contributed to bringing this sin into the body, and you have polluted the purity of the body of this sacred community. So, to influence another to sin, to tempt another to sin in any fashion in this community is of extremely serious, and there are severe consequences for it. So, it is hindering the purposes and the call of God in the world. And so what he's going to go in into verse 8 here. So this is part of talking about building community. First he's going to talk about here of not influencing another person to sin, not tempting another person in any way. And then he's going to talk about your own sin. In verse 8, he starts off, if your hand or your foot causes you to sin, cut it off and throw it away. It is better for you to enter life maimed or crippled than to have two hands or two feet and to be thrown into eternal fire. So he's not talking about literally mutilating your body here, but he's talking about be drastic with sin. Is there sin in your life? It's not just you. You're a part of this vehicle. You don't keep corrosion in one spot. If this one part is not working, then the vehicle, the sports car being out there on the road and doing what it does, it's not doing it well. It's putting things in danger. If there's sin in your life, it's putting the whole thing at risk. Not just you. If there is sin that's undealt with in your life, then it's putting you at extreme risk. It's putting this whole thing, this community, at extreme risk, and it must be dealt with. You see that it's radical. It's extreme. He's saying, do not tolerate sin in yourself. You deal with it. Do whatever you have to do. You get some help. You throw the computer out in the garbage. You have somebody come and stay with you. You do whatever it takes. You do whatever it takes. Do away. If there's sin, deal with it. It's causing corrosion, division, disruption in the community that you are a part of. So it's a principle of community, is that sin must be dealt with. It cannot be toyed around with. It cannot be tolerated. Sin must be dealt with. You see this as a principle that he gets into here. So then, he's going to move on here, talking about these principles. And down in verse 10. See that you do not look down on one of these little ones. So, you know, I'll go ahead and read this verse. For I tell you that there are angels in heaven see the face of my Father in heaven. Now, some people take this and say, oh, every little child has an angel watching over them. And that's fine if you want to think that. That's fine. This might be true. That's not the point of the verse. It's this. It's this that we are these angels in heaven who are watching over, ready to hear from God, ready to take action and serve us. They're looking and they're waiting, ready. And this whole thing is moving in this direction. We have all this help from heaven. We have all this direction from heaven. We have angels helping us, ready there to help us. And we need to be careful with this thing. This is total, absolute rebellion against God to just ignore sin in the body. And we have all this support and all this help to follow through on it. So, down in verse 12, he goes into the parable of the lost sheep. So I'll hit that one first. I was about to go into the brother sins against you, so sorry about that. So, with all of this community talk he has going on here, that in spite of all this, The individual is being watched over, and the individual matters. So he's going to tell this parable. If a man owns 100 sheep, in verse 12, one of them wanders away, will he not leave the 99 on the hills and go and look for the one that wandered off? And if he finds it, I tell you the truth, he is happier about that one than the 99 that wandered off. In the same way, your Father in heaven is not willing that any of these little ones should be lost. So, does it matter if just one minor part of us is not on track? Does that matter? You don't know how much it matters. The shepherd leaves the 99 and goes and seeks out that one that's off the path. The love that he has for that one. And so, before we go into this idea of disciplining the one that is strayed way off the path, we have to understand that the mode of all this is love. Is that this is one that has been purchased by the blood of Jesus. It's a part of this flock. And if he's off there just a little bit, then Jesus is saying, I care. I care so much about that one, that individual. I'm not even looking at all these others. So if you think you're off not quite right, and you think that you're not noticed, well, there's one that's noticing. The shepherd knows, because he's counting them every night. He knows exactly where you are. He knows exactly if you are on track. And if you are not on track, he's out searching for you. He's out searching for you to bring you in. And some of this lets us know our attitude towards those that are wandering. We are not to search for them with a big stick. We're to search for them with love in our hearts to draw them back in. But sometimes there are issues, and he gets into that too. So let's go down to verse 15. If a brother sins against you, go and show him his fault, just between the two of you. So what's going to happen in this community of believers? There are going to be disagreements, aren't there? I'm going to hurt your feelings sometimes. You're going to hurt my feelings sometimes. Those things are going to happen. This is pretty practical stuff. He's going to tell us how to deal with that. Now, he's going to give us a system, in a sense, a way that handles gossip, a way that handles just a growing chasm between believers or in a church. He's going to give us a way to deal with that. And he's going to give us a way to deal with it without gossip and criticism that goes on so often in a group of people. So a brother sins against you, go and show him his fault just between the two of you. If he listens to you, then you have won your brother over. So there's a principle here that's applicable both in severe sin and in there's just division between us. Things are not right between us. Then he gives a way to handle that, is that we go directly to the person. We don't go to everybody else. We go directly to the person, just between the two of you, it says. Now, so that's applicable if you see a brother in sin. It's applicable if we just have, you looked at me wrong. You know, sometimes you can misinterpret those things, you know. And it just helps just to say, why'd you look at me wrong? And I say that jokingly, we don't want to have to, it's not necessary to deal with every little tiny thing. We got to be able to forgive each other on the spot, you know. Maybe I'm grumpy and we're setting up the chairs or something and I said, throw it over there. And, you know, if you're Thomas, you won't even notice I said that. But if you're somebody else, you might say, why is he so mean to me? And then you might say, oh, you know, he has had a busy day and I just forgive him. We're just going to go on. But if it really bothers you the next day, then you need to come to me and say, why did you speak so meanly to me? And I'll say, well, I was just a real grump that day. I'm sorry. So we don't let these things go on. That's what I'm saying. We don't let them go on. And it also is a way to take care of sin in the body. It's not all the leader's responsibility to watch over and take care of sin in the body. If there's something that comes up and you know about it, and you know it's sin that's going on, it's your responsibility. Not to come tell me. It's your responsibility to do something about it, to take some action. That's the instruction that he's given them. He's putting a system in place. This is how it works. Now, this works in minor, less offense ways, too. It works in that you see a brother off track, going off a little bit. You know you have a responsibility. You have a responsibility to love them back in, to reach out to them, to bring them back in to the fellowship of the body. You see, this is merciful. So somebody could take this one little thing and they could blow it out of proportion. They could apply it in a wrong fashion and it could come across as pretty hard-hearted and legalistic and all of that. But love is what motivates this. And it's merciful. It's merciful in the way that it's handled here. Especially if you look at this within context of the whole chapter. It protects the body, doesn't it? It protects the individual, doesn't it? It's so easy for someone to cause division and be on the wrong side of God, and for the body and even a non-believer not really know it. Not really. So, this is a way that we bring these things to the attention of someone. And certainly, as I said, it has been, it can be, certainly handled incorrectly. But it's about caring about and loving the brethren. The purpose is always reconciliation and not punishment. That's always the purpose. And so, this particular, it tells what happens if somebody doesn't listen. It tells the extreme case. It tells when somebody refuses to repent. And so you bring another part of the body in to verify and to help and to love them. And if that doesn't work, you bring it to the leadership of the church and you bring it before the whole church. And if somebody is in absolute rebellion, then if you follow all the way down, it says that they are put, where did it go here? 17. It'd be help if I was in chapter 18. If he refuses to listen to them, tell the church, if he refuses to listen even to the church, treat them as you would a pagan or a tax collector. One thing about a pagan or a tax collector is that now that person, in a sense, they're not a part of the fellowship of the body. That doesn't mean you no longer love them, you no longer reach out to them, but you really reach out to them as a non-believer. That's how you handle it. Because if they've come to this place and there's been no repentance, then it's likely this person is not a believer. And so that's, they're handled and looked at in a little different fashion now. Always the goal is reconciliation. Always the goal. So, you know, in one sense, I'd like to ask, does everybody understand this? Because somebody could really get a wrong idea of this and think, oh, this is so harsh and you guys, this is so mean. But it's not. It really is love. It's out of a motivation of love, reconciliation, unity, and the body being able to do, and you being able to take your place in the body. And then, following this, of course, oh, there's one more thing there I wanted to mention, is that a lot of times there's a this section that I tell you the truth, whatever you bind on earth, that's in verse 18, we bound in heaven, whatever you loose on earth will be loosed in heaven. Again, I tell you that if two of you agree about anything, ask for it and it will be done for you by my Father in heaven. Now, there's plenty of promises on prayer. This is not really one of them. This is within the context of all this is within the context of church discipline. It's that the church has authority, that the church is agreeing with what God has stated in heaven and what he stated here, and is carrying out what God has stated. It's been agreeing with him. It's the church being in unity, doing what God's called the church to do. And this is what this is talking about here. There's plenty of verses you can claim promises on prayer, and they're certainly similar to this, but you can go back and read this. It's within context of this whole thing of the community of the church and discipline of the church in this last part here. So there, if I've totally confused you, but we're going to move on anyway. The next part that is critical to understanding and carrying on with the community is forgiveness. And that starts with verse 21. And Peter, thinking that he's being so very generous and going with the even increasing what the traditional Jewish way of forgiveness. So then Peter came to Jesus and asked, Lord, how many times shall I forgive my brother when he sins against me? Up to seven times? Jesus answered, I tell you, not seven times, but 77 times. And what he's saying here is ongoing forgiveness. Is that, who are we to think? And then he goes on to tell a parable about a servant that owed his master money. And he begged him, let me off of this. And the master forgave him. And then he goes out, you know, to all these people that owe him money. And he basically, they owe him almost nothing. He chokes them and demands their money. And then the master finds out about this, you know, and he goes and says, after I have offered you this forgiveness and you go and you treat these ones like this, I don't think so. And what he's saying to us is, who are you to withhold forgiveness from your brother? What has God forgiven you? He's forgiven you everything. You did nothing to get it. He was your substitute. He died in your place. He paid the price, the eternal price, for your sin. And he forgave you. He's offered you this. And now you won't forgive some offense of a brother? That will not fly. That will not work with God. So, critical to the community of believers is being able to forgive one another. This includes your family members. That you forgive. And you know, there's a thing that I wish, I've talked about this as far as family relationships, and certainly it applies to church relationships, is instant forgiveness. You know, sometimes you need to talk and straighten things out. But really, what we would like to see is, if you offend me, I'll offer you instant forgiveness on the spot. I don't have to say it. Instantly, I'll offer you forgiveness. Now, what is the joy is to be in a relationship with somebody else that does that back to you. Now, that's cool. I just messed up. But I know I'm forgiven. we'll straighten it out. You see, it still needs to be straightened out. But once you've forgiven one another, the straightening out is easy. So, we have no right. And I know there's a lot of different, maybe you've studied this, there's a lot of new theologies out there about not having to forgive until you're forgiven and all this garbage. Doesn't work like that. We forgive. We must forgive and forgive instantly. We have no right to withhold forgiveness from a brother. So, if you are going to be a part of a community, if you're a believer, you're called to be a part of a community, then this must be a part of something you learn how to do. You learn how to offer forgiveness. You learn how to forgive others instantly. Now, you may need to deal with it, as we just talked about. There's a method, there's a system in place to deal with things. And so you need to follow through and deal with that if it needs to be done. But still, forgiveness is a part of the community. Doesn't work without forgiveness. Or we're just going to be a club and just keep things on the surface. We aren't going to have real love for one another. Because it's pretty tough to love somebody when you have something against them, when you're holding something against them. So the goal is always to get things dealt with, get back into full fellowship. Now, some may be able to handle reconciliation of the relationship, but they're still not really on the same page for, say, disciple making and partnership. Well, you still have to hold that forgiveness towards them and reconcile the relationship and move towards partnership and move towards the partnership of both of you fulfilling the call of Christ in your life. So, what about you? You are a part of a community. You're here this morning, at least today, you're a part of this community on a Sunday morning. You're a part of this community. Now, there are other communities that that you are a part of. But is there a detail that needs to be taken care of in some way that you are contributing to division or impurity, unforgiveness, the effectiveness of the body? Is there some detail that needs to be taken care of? You can't be neutral. You have to be doing your part, actively doing your part for the cause that we've been called to. Is your lifestyle community building or is it dividing? Is it self-focused? Are you an unavailable part of the community? You know, are you not available because you have your focus over here on something else? Generally, that something else is self, some form of. But you're basically unavailable to the community because you are distracted. So you're called to build up the community, to develop community. So start somewhere. You see, you're a part of many circles. So Friday morning, the men gather. That's a little community. Then there's a community. There's a Bible study on Wednesday night that meets. That's a little community. Now there's overlap. There's a bunch of us that work out. That work out on Tuesday night. That we used to be Tuesday and Thursday and all this, but it's a little community. So we come together on Friday and there's all this overlap of communities. And we say, hey, how did the study go on Wednesday night? Oh, how was the workout? There's these communities that you're a part of. And there's a lot of overlap to those communities. But what we want to see is we want to see you develop. Are you living in a lifestyle that develops communities? Even small communities of 2, 3, 4, 10. So, I'm going to explain one of the communities that I'm a part of. And the reason I'm going to explain this, one reason is because it's going to impact. I'm not going to be here next Sunday morning. And it's because of this. So I'd like to explain this to you if I can. You know this thing that you've heard us talk about, this CrossFit thing that the workout that goes on at our house. Used to be, we've kind of made a few changes, but I'm going to explain kind of the way it was. It's Tuesday and Thursday, we would do these workouts at the house. And there's a purpose behind that. And the purpose is disciple making. So maybe if I just maybe if I just describe to you a Tuesday night. I'm going to describe to you just one example. This is my personal example. one small, I'm a part of many communities, but this one small community building. Now, before I do this, you have to understand that things have to be real, okay? You can't just take a tool and apply it. And if your cause is really not the purpose of Christ, if you don't have a real genuine love for those people, then it doesn't work, okay? No matter what the tool is, it doesn't work. So this is one tool. So we would have at whatever, 4:30, 5, there would be four or five young guys that would come, and some of those would be kids, some would be just be people that are just starting to work out. And so they would gather in the garage, and some of the older guys, like some of the college guys and stuff, would help train them. So they would come in, work out. Some of the older ones that have been there for a while would help train them. So you see some relationships, some mentoring begins to take place. Then those kids go, then another group gathers, and there's some mutuality, some unity, some fellowship. So that takes place. That group works out. And then after that, we eat together. Everybody gets a job. Somebody cuts fruit. Somebody puts the meat on the grill. Somebody makes the vegetables. So everybody gets a job to do. And so there's community. You see, there's a purpose behind it. There's some community that begins to take place. There's interaction. There's fellowship. They have something in common. And there's mentoring and discipleship making that goes on there. So that's a little bit of a community that takes place. Now there's other communities I know that some of you guys are doing. Like I mentioned the Wednesday night. I know some of you have talked about, I don't know how far it's gone, of offering horseback riding lessons. You develop a little community around that. Now, in this one instance of that little community that I was just describing on Tuesday, you know, we had one particular recently, a young man come into that, and he tried to describe he couldn't describe what happened. Now, we know what happened. He came into contact with an overflow of Christ. But it was something he was hungry for, and he wanted more. And he wanted to bring somebody else in. And so he saw John chapter 17. That's what he saw. Now, so what we want to see is that go on to the next step, you know, a Firm Foundations Bible study or something like that. But so that was community developing. So the reason I bring up this particular thing is that next weekend, I'm going up to Park City. David's going to go. We're going to get certified as a level one CrossFit trainer. And Lori and Caleb are going to come. And we don't know if this is going to work out, how this is going to go in the future. But see, it's something that we might be able to offer as a tool to the body. So that letter I got this morning was a real encouragement from the guy from Madagascar. If it works in Madagascar, did I say Madagascar? I'm all over the place. Mongolia. If it works in Mongolia, it'll work in Madagascar. So what? Yeah, I'm brainstorming here. You guys need to develop. We all can develop community around us. Now, this might be something, a tool that you guys could use. So some ladies have asked, why don't we get a class? And I say, great, we would like to do that. Help us brainstorm here. So do you see, but the purpose is outreach. The purpose is build community and include those. But the thing, we have to be on the same page. We have to have the same heart or it doesn't work. So yeah, if that's what you guys can encourage that. We start a ladies class. Well, that could be, I'm just using this as an example. That's a little community that can develop and that can bring people into with the hope of them seeing Christ in it. So is your lifestyle community building? One thing, it really needs to start with your family. There must be community in your family, or certainly it's not going to spread on outside of that. And none of this works, again, none of this works without the cross, humility, responding to God. It has to be the humility of Christ spilling over. And, you know, we used to call it Outpost, Kingdom Outpost Homes. Remember, we used to talk about that a lot. And, you know, back when we lived on St. Simon's, it was a thing because of the culture there. And it happened more naturally. we had community in our home like that. It was always packed. It was always discipling. It was always eating, always going home, because that didn't happen as naturally in the culture here. So we thought of something else. We did something else. But we build, we can be a part of and build community. That doesn't diminish the individual, but it empowers the individual to make you more effective for the cause of Christ. So, and we've talked about this before. I'm encouraging you to be a part of, to dream, to think through, what is God calling me to in this arena? It may be to something that already exists, or it may be something that He's calling you to dream about. So, hopefully if this, we're just experimenting with this next step, with the CrossFit thing, and maybe that's something that some of you would desire to or want to be a part of. And you will also step into other people's communities and to recognize where you are and what you're doing. This is the community I'm stepping into. So we go over, we join a CrossFit gym that's not ours. Well, we're stepping into somebody else's community. But still, we can impact that community. You go to the horse arena, you can step into that community. You can impact that community. And if you're not impacting that community, if you're not being used, then put your time somewhere else that will last, that will matter for eternity. So pay attention to how these things work and how they interact. And if it's not counting for eternity, if it's all it's doing is doing you good or your fun, then you better rethink and reinvest somewhere else to where it matters and where it counts for eternity. This is the way God has chosen to work. So this is our heart, to do these things, to have, to develop community, to bring into, be the body of Christ, whether we are in some oppressive, persecuting government, or whether we have great freedom like we do here, and we have great responsibility that comes with great freedom. We have freedom to do these things, so we need to be taking action and doing them, and not just spending our freedom on our own pursuits, but pursuing the purpose and the cause of God and doing that in partnership with others. You know, I don't know if I've described that very well, but I've had the joy of living it. So, if you didn't get that, come by the house next Tuesday and you can experience it. Or Wednesday. Or wherever you know a community is operating and doing what God's called to do with God's purposes in mind.